Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex wrote in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson producing back there, the EP of the show on a Friday. And it's about 8 o'clock, which means it's time to talk with Lee Sterling and make some people some money. Lee joining the program here makes picks every single week from Paramount Sports. Lee, how are you, sir? And let's get right into it, man. We got a huge weekend of college football championship games. We got another huge weekend of NFL action. So let's start with the big one here in this area of the country, LSU against Georgia. Now, I got my co-host to give me 14.5 points. I've got Georgia plus 14.5. I feel like that's a no-brainer bet. But what about the actual line, LSU laying 7 against Georgia?
I think it's a no-brainer, but it's going to be a great matchup. You got two Goliaths. You have the LSU offense. I think LSU and Ohio State's offense, these are two maybe of the greatest offenses we've seen in the last quarter century against a Georgia defense that, if you look at just scores, you say, okay, they gave up 20 to South Carolina, but one of those scores was a pick six. Their defense has given up no more than 17 points, which is incredible for a 12-game schedule. And this is the modern era of college football. It's like playing 7-on-7. So two just Goliath, behemoth, great units here, and LSU's putting up at least 500-plus yards on 10 to 12 opponents. I think Georgia's defense, their game plan is going to be keep everything in front of them, make LSU use 12, 14, 15-play drives, and go down the field, make them kick a couple field goals, and earn it. Nothing cheap, and try to get a couple takeaways. Even though the Georgia offense isn't great, I think the LSU defense is vulnerable here. They gave up 37 to Ole Miss, 38 to Vanderbilt here, and maybe the biggest thing here in college championship weekend is motivation. LSU is most likely in the college football playoff regardless of the outcome, and Georgia needs to win to get in. I don't think they're going to win at all, but I think they're finding a way in here. I like Georgia outright, guys. 34-31. You're going to cash that ticket plus the 14.
Wow. That would be something. That would be the clean playoff.
I've liked Georgia for weeks in this one. I like Georgia for weeks in this one.
All right, Lee, Utah giving 6 against Oregon. Obviously, you know, talk about a solid defense. Utah has been there all year playing a quarterback some people think is a top 10 talent. What do you see in this game?
So, I think this is one of those games you got to check the weather. So I'm going to wait until the telecast starts. Here's the forecast. The forecast is for 80% chance of rain and winds between 20 and 25 miles an hour. If that's the case, Utah quarterback Tyler Huntley, big advantage here. This is a dual-threat quarterback. He's run for not 5 touchdowns this year. Every week he's 13 for 16, 14 for 17, and they have by far the better defense. Well, you'll say, okay, Utah's 1, Oregon's number 2, but Oregon's a distant second in team defense. Utah's defense allowing just 242 yards per game. Oregon almost 100 yards behind that, allowing 331 per game. And Oregon struggled to beat Oregon State last week when Oregon State was playing a backup quarterback here. And the Ducks 0-6 as a road underdog. Give me Utah here. The weather's bad, 20-10 over Oregon.
Lee Sterling joining us here, giving us all kinds of picks against the spread, making you guys money from Paramount Sports. Let's go to the NFL, and the Tennessee Titans, not good on the West Coast, but they are favored, a small favorite, 2 points against the Oakland Raiders. How do you like the Titans this weekend?
So Oakland has just laid an egg the last couple weeks, and this is where Chucky does his best work. They lost 7 straight to the Chiefs. For some reason, they can't play the Chiefs, but they'd also given up 30-plus points in consecutive losses for the first time, how about this, I checked this, since 1961. Huge win for Tennessee. The blocked field goal, then the touchdown pass. They're on a high. I think Oakland's going to throw the tight end early and often here, maybe try a couple trick plays here. I think Tennessee comes out on top 24-23, but I think Oakland plus the 3 is the right side. I think this game's going to go right down to the wire, be decided maybe on the last play of the game.
Fascinating game for me here, Lee. Baltimore at Buffalo. Baltimore 5-point favorites against another really terrific defense on the road. How do you see this one playing out?
Terrific defense, but Buffalo hasn't beaten anyone. I mean, they haven't beaten a quality team this year. So I just think that Baltimore is just so tough to game plan for. It's like playing a college team with the RPO options there. And then Baltimore, once they get past the midfield line, they go for it almost every fourth down. They're 14 for 18 on fourth down tries this year. Lamar Jackson, 20 touchdowns and no interceptions the last seven games. But why are they also a better team is look at their defense. Since they traded for Marcus Peters and they got back cornerback Jimmy Smith, they can play a lot more man-to-man coverage here. I like Baltimore. They keep rolling here, 27-20.
Lee Sterling joining us here from Paramount Sports. And, of course, fans paying close attention to the Houston Texans here in Nashville. They are on the road against Denver. Any chance at all Denver makes this a game?
I think it's going to be tough. I mean, they were very, very lucky to get a win last week with Drew Lock. I mean, here's a guy that he just didn't do anything. He threw for all of 11 yards in the second half. Needed an absolute gift interference call to set up that winning field goal on Sunday. And now they got a deal. He's got to deal with Romeo Crennel's, you know, well-disguised coverages. A lot of rookie quarterbacks have come unnerved facing this type of defense here. I like Houston, 24-13.
Lee, game of the week, where can everybody get involved and how can they get access to that?
How great is this one? Kansas City and New England. Two teams. This is a must-win for both of these two teams, fighting for home field advantage, first round of the playoffs. You want to get Kansas City and New England, Mahomes against Brady, the rematch of the championship game, the AFC last year, which was great. Just call 800-400-9741. And I also have two big basketball games I found. In fact, college basketball last night, we had High Point upset over Elon in overtime. We also had that big Furman call. They almost won the game plus 12.5 points against Auburn. So we've been on a roll in basketball. I'll give them two basketball and this NFL game for free. All they need to do is call 800-400-9741. And if you're looking to get involved, now's the time. We've been on a roll. We have championship weekend this weekend. We've got 4 weeks left at the NFL season, still a lot of time. 44 bowl games, and it's going to get trickier as more guys hit the transfer portal or sit out because they're going to be going in the NFL draft. We do all the work for you. And in fact, three of the last 5 years, we've hit above 67% on these 44 bowl games. So everything through the Super Bowl, college and pro football. I'm going to do it in your city only today, just $297, not save 100 on the website. Put in coupon code SAVE200, just $297 for the Super Bowl. It's available right now, ParamountSports.com.
Lee, can I throw you a curveball about the Heisman
Trophy? I do every game, so I'm ready.
Well, the Heisman Trophy is what I was going to ask you about, and you like Georgia to win, which is fascinating. Joe Burrow appears to be the front runner. Who are the other names that you think are going to be invited to New York, and does that loss to Georgia affect his stock as far as odds go?
I still think he's going to win it, but I think obviously Fields will be invited from Ohio State. I think he's like 37 or 38 touchdowns and with just one interception. Any other year, he wins this thing going away. You know, the third spot is so wide open. You know, maybe someone like, you know, Chase Young. They might even go with Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor. I mean, most seasons he wins it. So this has been, I think there's been three super teams, and this is one of those years where maybe five or six guys deserve the Heisman Trophy.
Lee Sterling, always a pleasure, man. Paramount Sports, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I do want to throw a PSA out there. As a Heisman voter, please don't vote.
Oh.
Please don't vote until our deadline to vote is like Sunday at like 3 o'clock.
I hate people who vote this week.
I do not understand why you would vote before the chance. Like,
just because the ballots in your inbox don't do it.
Yeah, we got it on Monday. So I got the ballot on Monday, right. And I'm like, I don't even open the email. Because if you care about teams playing for championships as part of the evaluation process, don't you want to know who makes the playoff? Don't you want to know who wins conference championship games? Don't you want to know what they do in the biggest spots If Jalen Hurts has a monster game and gets Oklahoma into the playoff, shouldn't that affect the way maybe people view
his
performance?
Yeah, like Joe Burrow's the clear favorite. I would vote for him right now, and I probably will. But you know what? What if he throws three pick sixes and is just awful in this game? I mean, can you not change your mind? Justin Fields, I think, is closer to him than he gets credit for. I think Fields is close, should be considered closer to Burrow than people consider him.
It would only take the Midwest, if everybody around the country voted him number two, it would only take like maybe the entire Midwest voting him number one to maybe get him closer than we think to Joe Burrow. And so the problem is you could argue Chase Young and J.K. Dobbins belong on the ballot as well. And
well, honestly, Chase
that's
Young.
That's a lot of dudes from one team.
I'm a huge defensive player to win the Heisman. I voted for Sue year, that, you know, for example. I think I voted. I don't know.
We should compare votes.
Yeah, but I will say
I'll show you yours. I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
The problem, honestly, I was ready to vote for Chase Young or, you know, wherever, somewhere on the ballot for sure, you know, depending on how he did in that Michigan. I was like, if he dominates this game with his numbers and they go win and he dominates, wrecks the game, then I think you have to. But the thing is, they blew them out with Michigan actually doing a great job against him. So
what's funny is I think there's a different defensive lineman that might be on my ballot. And he might we're not technically allowed to give out who we're going to vote for.
Yeah, whatever. No one cares.
I think Derek Brown has been as impactful this season at Auburn as Chase Young has been.
He's a great player.
I would take one of those two, number one overall, and not even think twice about it in the draft. I think they could be one and two, and I'd be totally fine if I was picking there. It will be interesting to see who's two and three, because you can make a case for Jonathan Taylor, Justin Fields. I think Trevor Lawrence has worked his way back into the conversation. His numbers are exceptionally good. Oh, my God, he threw a couple of interceptions early in the year. He's a true sophomore. He's never lost a game. His numbers are exceptional. Jalen Hurts is going to be in the conversation as well.
Yeah, I was surprised Lee didn't mention Hurts because, you know, he should be.
I agree. And, again, if conference championship performance is in the biggest stage, getting your team into the playoff, those aren't the deciding factors. But they should be factors.
Like, it's one of 13 evaluations, and it's probably one of the top three or four evaluations.
Yes. So the people who voted, now I think last year, and I don't remember if you remember the numbers, but I want to say last year it was one of the lowest percentages of people voting before championship set. So like I think people are coming around on it.
Yeah, I mean, it should be zero, but great.
Right. Dude, you're preaching to the choir. There's plenty of time for you to sit down at your computer, type in three names on Sunday after the playoff comes out.
And your weird little password, and then you're done.
Yeah, it's very strange. Take people behind
some
them.
Symbols in mind this year that I don't know what they are. I don't know how to find them on the keyboard.
Yeah, I don't know how to find them on the keyboard. First world problems here.
Yeah. This is some good humble bragging right here. Yeah.
Hey, Marquise, do you have a Heisman vote, man? What's up, man?
I don't, man. But if I did, I would
vote for Tua, number one.
Yes,
that's right.
Brian, of course. Brian Robinson, number two.
Brian Robinson, Mac number one. Najee, two. Probably Jerry Judy.
Najee Harris has had a far better season than anyone's going to give him credit for.
Quiet in the beginning.
But he carried that team for a long time.
Did.
And he has really changed his game this season. He finally has turned into the five-star running back that I think everybody thought he was going to be when he got there. I mean, Jerry Judy and Devontae Smith are just rugs. These guys are just – Jalen Waddle is uncoverable.
Those guys are like all like
– projected first
Well,
runners.
They're pros, but also like they could be Heisman guys like if they weren't all on the same team.
Yes.
You know?
If he was – if any one of those four guys was the starter like CeeDee Lamb is at Oklahoma and was just the guy, think about the numbers they'd be
Although he
up.
Is special though.
CeeDee
Lamb
great.
Is special.
CeeDee Lamb
but they're special too.
CeeDee Lamb's great. You put Jerry Judy or Jalen Waddle in that Oklahoma offense. Yeah. And it's not like Alabama's offense was a joke either. I mean,
no, it's just there's so much talent and condensed.
Yeah, my fourth vote went to Slade Bolden. So there you go.
I love a good Slade Bolden reference. Nothing like that. Terry Crisp, Terrence Arthur Crisp coming up crispy in about 30 minutes. We do have the National Predators back on the ice, so we'll change gears from football to hockey. The text line is open, 615-737-1025. I'd like to know if you're going to – I'm assuming everyone's going to cheer P.K. Subban and give him a pretty good round of applause on Saturday night.
If not, don't show up.
All right. I was going to ask your thoughts next segment.
That's
but you
it.
Just, you just gave me all the thoughts. We'll get to P.K. Subban's return to Nashville when we return right here on Morning Drive. Oh, back when Kings of Leon was good. Is this off Youth and Young Manhood? Is this off the first album?
I think so, yeah.
They're not good anymore?
They're terrible.
What? Come on.
Yeah. First,
why?
Go listen.
Why
to
are
the
they terrible?
Go listen to the first album.
I like King Graham.
Take from Braden Gall.
Youth and Young Manhood.
I love Braden's like music takes.
Though. Youth and Young Manhood is like 70s Southern New York punk. It is awesome. It is. It's full of just absolute bangers.
No one's ever put those words together.
But that's what they were though. Right. They were a like a little country band from Oklahoma, two piece, trying to make it on Music Row, and they got switched from this like gospel country thing into we're going to do rock and roll. And they sort of brought this 70s New York punk style into their country, and it turned into this what you get in the first two albums, Aha Heartbreak and Youth and Young Manhood, two phenomenal albums.
And then released in 2003. This was on the Holy Roller Novocaine album.
Yeah, that's Youth and Young Manhood, I believe.
Okay.
Is the first one. And then Aha Heartbreak was the second one. Because of the Times, I believe, is the third one. And then Sex on Fire came out, and I was like, what the hell are y'all doing? It got bad after that.
I actually do like that song. I like that song, too.
Yeah. It's not... Oh, God.
Here we go.
I'm not even sure the drummer knows what's happening
in that song. It's not Rick Kings of Leon.
I'm not even sure the drummer is on beat. Like, I'm not even sure he's on beat in that song. Use Somebody and Be Somebody are both on that album. Be more creative than that. I'm sorry. Kings of Leon, I love your early stuff. Your newer stuff's terrible.
Wow. Sam. Okay.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Right. I'm a little worked up.
You know, I
love the old stuff. I hear the old stuff.
Speaking of your music takes, you know, you're a little hard on the 80s, too, man.
All right, let me have it.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you're looking at 80s fluff. Every decade has fluff. The 80s fluff, everyone associates just the fluff. REM's great albums. U2's great albums.
Metallica started in the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, the hip-hop started in the 80s. Incredible.
NWA.
Old school. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great music from the 80s.
Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah. I mean, 80s. You can go on and on.
Michael Jackson.
The Cure, you know? They've got some
Michael
great
Jackson.
Albums.
But they all got. I feel like they all got popular in the 80s and then existed in the 90s. Does that make sense? Like they all like Metallica broke through with the Black Album.
Only good stuff is in the 80s. REM's good stuff is
in the
80s. U2's been great. Okay,
you've named like three bands.
All right, I'm gonna rip off a list for you. How about this?
The popular stuff, the mainstream stuff, like because it took a while for hip hop to catch on that stuff.
But the Beastie Boys, Run DMC, obviously that stuff brought it mainstream. LL Cool J,
was Beastie Boys not bigger in the 90s?
Well,
no, their greatest album was by far their biggest album.
Now it's not their best.
What
album,
year did that come out?
86.
Yeah. I had a question.
Man, that's
I had a question for
Marquise.
I had a question for Joe, but I have to wait.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm waiting to stick to sports. Because we got to get moving to sports.
What are you saying? We got to talk about sports?
Yes.
PK Subban's coming back on Saturday. Okay, let's go back to the 80s.
PK coming back.
Listen. The Devils have fired their coach. The Devils suck. You need to get 2 points. Cheer PK Subban. End of rant.
But really, like no one's not cheering him.
Of course
right?
not. I hope not. Yeah. Now, I don't think they're going to do some massive tribute. Like, I don't think they're going to do like a whole like 3 minute video pregame or whatever. I think there'll be like a first period. An acknowledgement of PK Subban.
They got to have a video.
I don't think there'll be a video. I assume it'll be similar to just during a TV timeout in the first period, they'll do PK Subban, thank you for all your stuff, and like a picture up on the big screen. I don't think they're going to do a video.
But man, I think they should do a video, and I know it's only a short period of time here, but you can't say that he didn't have a massive effect on this franchise. Apart from hockey, and the best hockey this franchise ever played, he was central. He wasn't, he was one of the guys. He was a key acquisition. I mean, I think he absolutely deserves a hearty video.
He's played every game for the Devils this year. He's only got 5 points, and he's minus 12 on the year.
No, it was a well-timed move.
I think it was the right time to move him, but this is where two things in your brain can be true, and it's very hard for people in sports to kind of do this sometimes, but two things can be true. That it was the right time to move his $9 million contract on an aging defenseman.
Yep.
And that maybe you miss him a little bit, clearly defensively with Dante Fabro's growing pains. Going to be a great player, but growing pains. And also, it was three of the most important, if not the three most important years in Predators hockey history. And that he did more for the team than just, like you said, it was how it all happened. The confluence of events and personalities and everything coming together for an eight seed to go cup. you know, cup final, then to go President's Trophy, then win another division. It's you cannot argue with the accomplishment, but it also came with the personality. And I think when you put it all together, it's the three most important years in Predators history, like bar none.
Well, especially the two, the first two. I mean, obviously you go to the cup final and you win the President's Trophy. He's a runner-up for the Norris.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, he was out front in those postseason runs. He was really the front man. He was the one who would – a bad loss, everybody's going to PK's locker. He's the one who's actually out there, like, tangling with Sidney Crosby.
Didn't he guarantee a win?
He guaranteed a win. And
was that against Winnipeg? I think that was against Winnipeg.
I think that's correct. And, well, I believe he did it more than once.
Might have done it more than once.
I think he did it more than once.
Like, we're going to go back to Nashville and we're going to win, period. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, and look, he
or
was
going
great.
To their building maybe. And
he was great. I mean, to me, the Subban-Ekholm pairing in that cup run, look at how, I mean, again, it's amazing to look back at the lineups and the lines that were being thrown out for that team once the injuries really got bad. I mean, those, you know, the whole defense corps, of course, the top four were great, but Subban-Ekholm, I thought, were just unbelievable in that run. So it wasn't just like international star brings attention to the organization, never had on stuff. It was also fantastic hockey. And so, yeah, he deserves a huge standing ovation. And you're right. Two things can be true. I mean, it was the right move. I don't know how it's going to pay off this year, but I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I hope he does get a video. I hope that does happen. I just don't – it's not going to be the same as Shea Weber. It's just – I don't think it will be –
Right, yeah, years and years and years as the captain.
Yeah.
And sure.
So we'll see what happens. Either way, they're back. And more importantly, you need 2 points. And this is a team with Kyle Turris sort of playing well. The drama of the Peter Laviolette-Kyle Turris situation, you know, 9 times he's been a healthy scratch in his career here as a Nashville Predator. He's the third highest paid skater on the team. He did inject some offense. You know, it's really what I find really difficult to analyze is like, all right, let's break down Peter Laviolette's decisions on what's best for his team. It's hard for me to believe that he would do something that is against his own team's best interest. That seems hard to believe. He's making a ton of money in a high pressure job to make the right decisions to win games. They beat St. Louis twice without Kyle Turris on the lineup and with Daniel Carr and Matthew Olivier. Arvidsson gets hurt in game one. You can't argue with the results on the decision-making there from Peter Laviolette. He got 4 points from St. Louis. Hard to argue. Now, they've come back and they didn't play well against Florida. You know, they lose in heartbreaking fashion to Vegas. They don't really particularly play all that well against Carolina, but Pecorine stole one. And then this Tampa game was just it was a great game.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you evaluate the decision to sit him if you're winning. If you're losing games, it's very easy for all of us to say, dude, what are you doing? And you're not telling us anything about it. But they did win some games in there with the different lineup. So I find it very hard to evaluate the decision to sit Kyle Turris.
Yeah, I don't think it's as simple as, I mean, you're right. Like, if you're Peter Laviolette, you've got to win games and you've got to do what's best. I do think that there's still within the 82-game schedule some long game you play, and I think that had to be some of this. And I think it can be as simple as not getting enough from you, Kyle. Have a seat. I just thought it went
too far,
too long, longer than I would have guessed. And again, once the Arvidsson injury happens and he's still scratched, it's like, whoa, what's happening here?
The two St. Louis games, extremely heavy games, very physical games.
I understand
that. But after that, you're going, all right, Vegas, this is a speed game. This is where we're going to fly up and down the ice. You know, we need to play this style. And here's the other thing. It's not like you can put Kyle Turris on the wing on the fourth line.
No.
He's not going to be successful. You have to put him in a position to be successful.
And he was against Tampa, and he was successful.
Now, Ryan Johansson, Granlund both out. It was sort of forced into that situation. But if you look at, again, I don't think it's, I think fans have gone so far into Kyle Turris's corner on this.
Is amazing.
Because they didn't really like him all much that last year. But like, you can't just say, oh, why are you calling up Matthew Olivier instead of playing Kyle Turris? Because Kyle Turris is not going to function well as a winger on the fourth line. That is not where he's going to find success. Even as a winger on the second line, you could argue that's not where he's going to find success. Now, did they actually give him a chance to show that he could be successful as a winger? They probably didn't do that. They toyed with it a little bit in preseason camp, but they never really gave him a chance to actually do it. If he had shown us success as a winger on the second line previous prior to calling up Daniel Carr, it makes a little bit more sense. I still think Peter Laviolette handled the situation a little bit, you know, like a petulant child. It just sort of, well, I'm the coach. I can say whatever I want. I'm going to act all Belichickian up here and give you nothing. Well, then you put a bigger spotlight on it when you make those decisions.
No, I agree. But look, that's how he handles things. It's not going to change. So no one should be surprised. But a little bit more than he gave would have been nice. Because you're sure. Right. It made it a bigger thing. And it's just like, oh, what is happening? You guys got to keep asking the question.
Well, and now
it's
going
to be the same answer.
And now you got Stillman on the afternoon show saying, oh, I don't think they like each other. And I'm going, well, how do you know? Like, do we know? We have no evidence to back any of that up. But what you're doing is you're allowing us to speculate. And what I want to know is, again, I know David Poyle gave a long, extended response and basically said the exact same thing. It's a lineup decision. He's going to do what's best to make the team win. Why? Why does Kyle Turris not help you win right now? Is the question I wanted to know. Why, and the answer could be as simple as, man, we needed to play a heavier game. He's not as physical a player as some other guys are. He could have given us anything. So every night now is now turned into like a Kyle Turris, you know, he's either in prison or he's free or whatever, like yeah. Free Kyle Turris, like all this stuff. It's been blown up much bigger than it needs to be. The question I find most interesting, and I know we got to go to break here, so we'll talk to Crispy when we come back, and we'll ask Crispy this. If you're trying to trade a player, don't you have to play him?
Yeah. Well,
doesn't that have to happen?
Yes. I would also say on that, I would guess just about every avenue has been exhausted on that.
I think that's
the thing. He's got to respond to this, and he did in his first game back, and they've got to figure out a way to utilize it because they're stuck with each other.
Well, and he's playing the same exact game he's always played. Interesting quote from Kyle Turris after the game. All right, Crispy, when we come back right here on Morning Drive. You can check out, but you can never leave. Morning Drive. Joe Rexroad filling in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall.
70s were definitely better than the 80s. I will give you that.
And that's all I'm getting at when I rip on the 80s. Yeah. It's just that the 70s were better. And then we had the 90s grunge rock revolution, which changed music forever, along with hip-hop revolution that all happened in the early 90s. And the 80s sort of get lost in the middle. That's all.
Hey, I mean, 1991 is probably like the best music year ever.
Oh, unbelievable.
You know, so, no, I mean, like Nirvana. I'm a teenager, Nirvana, when that came out. I love it.
Pearl Jam.
But I'm just
Alice
saying,
Chains.
There is some great rock and hip-hop in the 80s.
Agreed.
That should not be Tony Basil Mickey, okay? I mean, there's other stuff.
There was a lot of yacht rock and hair metal.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I know, whatever. And I kind of like both, too. But hey, whatever.
Terrence Arthur Crisp joining us here. Crispy, of course, joining the program here, brought to you by the Highland Group. Crispy, how are you, my man? What's up?
Mark.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys, how are you this morning? I'm doing great, and we're just sailing along here waiting to see what New Jersey has to present to us tonight.
Hey,
or tomorrow.
So when a major player comes back to a building, or when you were a coach, or you went back to a place where you used to be, like Hal said this the other day on the show, you can always figure out who actually liked you and who didn't like you if you take an extra cross check here or an extra slash there. Like, what was it like when you returned to a place that you had previously been?
Probably the biggest thing is that you're excited. You want to prove that they made a mistake getting rid of you or trading you or however you want to phrase it. And the thing is, when you're in your dressing room, this is the part that hurt most. You had to put up $100 on the board for a win. The players made you to put it into a kitty, so you had to put $100 up on the board. If the guys won the game for you, you put $100 in the pot. That hurt more than anything.
So, Crispy, how should Predators fans think of and remember P.K. Subban for his 3 years here?
You know what? I love P.K. Subban. I think that P.K. Subban is here. He brought enthusiasm. He brought a different outlook on life, on the hockey game. He knows where he's going. He knows what he had to do. And for charity, et cetera, I enjoyed him. And anytime you talk to P.K. or go anywhere with him, he was always, always great with people. He'd sign autographs, take pictures. People just love to be with him. So from the standpoint of view of what did he bring to your team, he brought a presence that people appreciated, that people enjoyed being around him and being with him. So from that point of view, I enjoyed PK. His hockey, he was, I think last year in the playoffs, he was probably one of our best players.
Yeah, he's one of the one of the only guys that got better, went from the regular season to the postseason. Terry Crisp joining us here, Crispy on the show, brought to you by Highland Group. Crispy, both goaltenders have had stretches where they've been really, really good and stretches where they have not been good. And I don't think – I think it's a good thing for this team right now to have two guys that have such a close relationship that are pushing each other. But at some point there needs to be some semblance of a pecking order. When do you think that is? Does it need to be – March or April? Can it happen sooner? When do you think the Preds need to know who, quote, you know, their guy is going to be in net?
You know what? I don't think it's that bad to begin with because we have two good goalies. As a coach, I was an old-fashioned coach. I run the guy that was hot. So I was always part of the hot hand.
Terry Crisp joining us here. So you don't think they need to, even come playoff time, they don't need to have a set pecking order?
Playoffs, yes. You'll have whoever your hot goaltender, I'd imagine. Coach Laviolette's been there. He's won a cup. He knows what the heck it takes to win a cup. He's been to the finals with this hockey club before. So when it boils down to the time that you have to pick one man, yes. Coach Lav will have his goalie. But again, I'm going to say, fellas, we're sort of blessed here because both these goaltenders, Pekka-Rinne being the reigning king right now, Saros the prince in waiting, is going to one day be there. And I keep saying this, Pekka-Rinne is not ready yet to hand over his throne.
All right, Crispy, we were just talking about this last segment. There's a little bit of Calturas fatigue out here, but I want to ask you on Kyle, what's his – where does he help this team the most, and what did you see from him in his return the other night?
Probably when I first saw Kyle Turris, and I didn't know a whole lot about him because he was in the East. We didn't see a lot of him. When he first came here, it was interesting seeing what he brought. We made a big trade, and David stepped up to the plate and gave him a nice contract. He's a very skilled hockey player, but Kyle Turris is a very quiet person, and I've played with a lot of guys who are quiet. Let their game do the talking for them. You didn't hear a whole lot out of them in the dressing room, in the press, etc. And when he's on his game and plays, he is very skilled in making plays, making the pucks, face-offs. A lot of nights you might not notice Kyle Turris in during the game, quote, like standout hits or standout rushes or whatever. But at the end of the night, he'll have done his job very steady, set up. And I think Kyle is the type of player that when I was coaching, you have to really, really be calm when you're talking and working with a player like Kyle Turris. He knows what he wants. He's a very intelligent hockey player. And I think given a chance, Kyle will be good. But, again, I've been a coach also on the other side of the coin where you give them all the leeway they need. You pat them on the back all you can. And there comes a time when the player himself has to step up to the plate and say, okay, coach. And you know, I don't say the bad part, but the part about coaches are we're always expecting a little more from our players. We always would like to demand a little more. And our bottom line is, and everybody gets all excited about, I have been a player the same as Kyle, not his skill level, mind you, but I sat on the bench for 5-6 games for a coach, wondering why I wasn't hurt. I was doing my penalty-killing job, working hard, et cetera. And wondering why he wasn't playing me. Then I became a coach. I understood why. Because every night, you put a lineup together that you think is going to win that night's hockey game. Now, I know everybody said, well, Kyle Turris was out 5 or 6 games. A lot of players go through that. And you know what the end result is? How do you come out of that tunnel? When you come out of that tunnel, are your lights on, bright, and you're steaming, going full bore ahead, or are you still going to be upset? And I use the word back when I was coaching. Are you still pouting or sulking? Or you're going to prove to me and the rest of the team that, hey, this is your job and you're not giving it up.
Crispy, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend.
Anytime, guys. See y'all at the rink. Go, Fred.
There you go. Terry Crisp joining us here. Brought to you by the Highland Group. You know, somebody texted us and asked a question about Craig Smith, 615-737-1025. The text line now open. You can text us and get in that way. Somebody basically saying that I sound like an old man who refuses to acknowledge new music and still thinks Def Leppard is a good band. I don't feel like that was my side of the argument at all.
I think Crispy and I are more Def Leppard fans.
Yeah, I think that was more you, but whatever, it's cool. The other thing, somebody asked about Craig Smith instead of why, you know, maybe should Craig Smith have sat instead of Kyle Turris? Well, Smith plays the wing. Kyle Turris plays center, different positions. Craig Smith also is a little bit more physical, bigger yes. player, you know, that kind of thing. I will say this, though. Craig Smith, the thing that looks off about him is his hands. He doesn't look like he's lost a step at all from a speed standpoint. He just looks like he cannot handle the puck anymore. Am I wrong about that? I feel like every time he gets the puck, he's in space, he's entering the zone, and then he tries a move, and the puck is he loses the puck.
Is it
his hands?
Is it you know pressing, trying to grip in the stick, little dude?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know, but I don't know what the explanation would be.
He plays so fast as a skater that he's always, you know, the hands have always been there for him. He's got a great shot. He's always been able to get the shot off and kind of create forward momentum for his line, and it feels like every time I've seen, and maybe you're right, maybe it's the pressing, maybe he's pressing, but it just feels like every time he gets the puck in space with a chance to make a play, his hands aren't moving as fast as his feet, if that makes any sense. And I don't, it's a very bizarre observation, I realize that.
No, it's an interesting one, and I think that's clearly a guy, it's fair to bring him up as a guy they need more from. I mean,
sure,
no doubt about it.
And Rocco Grimaldi is on the other side of the equation. Rocco Grimaldi has been excellent, I feel like, especially for a player of his size, which is always something you're going to say about guys like Victor Arvidsson and Rocco Grimaldi. All right, when we come back, stick to sports time right here on Morning Drive. Oh, Whitney on a Friday. Old Whitney on a Friday. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexroad in for Derek Mason. So we're going to stick to sports, and then I'm going to put you to work, Joe, all right? Hey, not yet. Hey, wait for it.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
And stick to sports now on Morning Drive.
And this is Stick to Sports, brought to you by Decorating Den Interiors. Stick with the pros at Decorating Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment online at decoratingden.com.
That is what we call a cold read in the business, and you did that superbly, sir.
I think it was the Whitney Houston that Marquise just played. A little 80s love, baby.
Puts a little extra pep in your step there.
That's right.
Whitney Houston does.
Number one.
Okay, so there's a conversation we had, Joe, a while back.
Uh-oh.
And this was on Twitter. Now, you responded to one of my tweets because I personally think Ghetto Boy's Mind Playing Tricks on Me is one of the greatest hip-hop songs ever written.
Is there Twitter beef between Munson and
Joe? Not Twitter beef. Not my Twitter beef, at least.
Okay.
So, and then, you know, Joe responded, and Joe actually agreed. I'm pretty sure you agreed. Like, yeah, that's a very popular song. I like that song, but I would go a different route, and I understand that. And then Tommy Dees, who works at the Tennessean, my fun fact about Tommy, that was my... You know, internship, my first internship in college was with Tommy.
There you go.
And he said, "Let Me Clear My Throat" was one of his best rap songs. And Joe strongly, strongly disagreed with that. Now, personally, Joe, I like that song. I wouldn't put it in any list of greatest hip hop songs or, you know, all of all time, but I like the song. You seem to have a very issue with, Let Me Clear My Throat.
Well, it shouldn't be considered because it's a pop. It's a party pop dance hip hop song. You're talking real to me, like real hip hop.
Does In the Club count as party pop?
That's a great question.
Or does it count as a hip hop song?
That's a good question because I think you could make the case either way. But you're probably right. It's probably to me, Fight the Power, Public Enemy. You know, these are, you know, anything off Wu-Tang's first album.
Anything off?
You mentioned Juicy that day. Juicy. Things like that.
Nothing
but
a G Thing is my favorite of all time. And yeah. If that's cliche, I don't care.
And that's that's another borderline because that's a party song. But yeah, but the whole Chronic is great from front, you know, front to back. Like that song, Marquise. I don't think it should be considered in the same category.
No, I agree with you 100%. And like you said, Juicy and Nothing But a G Thing, and the way that song is composed by Dre and rapped on by Snoop, like you can't get any better than that.
Well, and music video's fantastic too.
Yes. White Sox hat.
Yeah, that's a great music video. Just don't watch it with the kids.
Rosa Parks is one of my favorites.
Rosa Parks is not even my favorite Outkast song.
I know but you're an Outkast aficionado.
Aquemini is one of mine.
A very underrated song.
Even the sun don't shine.
Very underrated
Heroes eventually die.
Yes.
Horoscopes often lie.
That,
And sometimes why?
No, in fact, they always lie.
Yeah, actually. They do. Oh, I was going to go on the whole spiel of that.
No, that was good.
But no, but it's like, but I tend to choose songs that, and that's why I say Equimini, Spody Odie, Dopealicious is like two of my favorite Outkast songs, which are songs that
they're not like the number one chart toppers. They're like cuts. Sort of like the deeper cuts, which is like how I listen to Zeppelin. Like I like Zeppelin for like. You know,
10 years gone.
Gallows Pole and Out on the Tiles. Yeah. Like I listen to the other stuff. I don't. You know, I'm not listening to Stairway to Heaven very often.
Yeah. Like to be honest, and this goes back to your King Leon, you know, take is I actually don't really like the newer Outkast stuff as much as I did the older stuff. Like once they got to Speaker Box Love Below, it kind of
But the Love Below is really good.
Yeah, anybody who all like everybody I've ever met, they always and I ask them like, "What's your favorite Outkast song?" They always say Roses. Always, every single time, either Roses or they know Heya, and it's just like no,
but it hit me. The Equimini album is what hit me, like when I was really listening to it, though, like that. So like, it's all about your timing too. Like, where did you come up? Because like, I like Jay-Z stuff, but I don't really. What's interesting is I don't like the Big Pimpin' album. Okay, it was all right. It had that
Volume
one,
3,
that one great song. But I like all the Blueprints. Like, give me all the Blueprints before any of the 90s stuff, even though I was more of a hip-hop fan in the 90s. Because that's when I was listening to Tupac and Biggie and N.W.A. and Outkast and, like, when I was a teenager.
Sure.
You know, and I wanted to, you know, bleep the police. like.
Yeah. I mean, I could submit the low-end theory, Tribe Called Quest, which it may not be like a one song that people identify with, but the entire album is great. But that's like all deep cuts.
See, I'm Run the Jewels now all the way. That's my favorite hip hop group. I don't know what you call them. Tandem.
I love Tribe. I did a classic hip hop show in college on the radio station.
That is awesome.
And I named my show "Can I Kick It" because that was my favorite Tribe Called Quest song.
The name of my show would be 36 Inch Chain. That's just it. That's all. That's all I would call it.
Also, Spotify, also, they did this thing on their app where it tells you the artist that you most listened to this decade and the artist that you most listened to this year.
That's cool.
What do you guys think the artist that you've listened to in the most this year or in this decade?
This year is probably Tyler Childers. His new album came out this year. But this year has been an exceptional year for music. The Raconteurs had a new album. Black Keys had a great album this year. Brittany Howard's album, if you like every single genre under the sun, listen to Brittany Howard. She's spectacular. But Sturgill's new album is like psychedelic, you know, rock country. I don't know what genre it fits into either. I listen to a ton of Jason Isbell. I would say Tyler Childers is the one I've listened to the most this year, which is pretty heavy country.
I listen to nothing new. I mean, I really, like, I don't like,
you like Def Leppard?
The hip-hop sound. I like old Def Leppard. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say, like, this decade is probably Radiohead, just because they're like my, but it also could be, like, it could be the Beatles.
Is it
weird?
Is it weird to call Radiohead ambient noise? Is that weird? Is that insulting to you?
No, it's wrong.
You're taking that personal?
Okay. Well, have you seen them live?
I have not, actually.
You should absolutely do that, because whatever you think that they're doing on an album, go watch them play it with drums, bass, guitar live, you know?
Bands are very different. I've got OK Computer and the Benz. I've got all that stuff on the phone. Like, I've got it, and I listen to it, but it turns into, I end up, like, drifting off doing other things while I'm listening to it. I don't find myself like into the, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I've heard this.
It's one of those I can't explain.
It's fine. No, right? I mean, a lot of people feel the same way.
I should like them more.
One of my artists would probably, for this decade, easily is Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
I've listened to since Section 80, which is like his kind of first independent album, since then, on over. And he's one of those people that we talk about how kind of people fall off once they start getting mainstream. Kendrick's one of those people, like, he stays in the same lane and he still has amazing albums.
I would say for the decade, it's probably been Jason Isbell. Not even close. The greatest songwriter of our generation. But there's so many great albums this year. Lucas Nelson, Willie Nelson's kid, has a great album. He is an unbelievable guitar player. Lucas Nelson's got a great album. Shovels and Rope, I listen to them a lot, which is like a two-piece country band. Like, I just, again, to the guy who texted in and said, I'm the old fogey who doesn't want to acknowledge new music. Like, I'm pretty
That's me.
I'm pretty sure I just rattled off a bunch of bands that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm the old fogey.
Kendrick was the only new name that I've said in this entire thing.
That's true.
And I probably listen to Drake probably a little bit more than I should, but, you know.
Everybody listens to Drake more than they should.
Yeah, he's a popular artist, so, hey, what can I say?
My kid, I mean, that's, yeah. My speaking of the 12-year-old, we talked about him earlier. I mean, it's just, it's constantly
Hotline bling, means one thing.
Here's the problem, because you talked about 91 with Pearl Jam and all that stuff. So I went and bought, like, I was 12 years old, maybe 11 years old when I bought Nevermind. The album, it was a CD. I went to Tower Records in Austin, Texas, and I was like, I'm going to go buy this. My mom was like, all right, I'm taking you down there. You're going to get to buy some CDs. And I got Cracked Rear View from Hootie and the Blowfish and Nirvana Nevermind. And I don't think my mother knew what was on the CD. Do you have a problem with, like, explicit lyrics or any of that stuff with a 12-year-old? Or where's the line?
It's got to be the radio.
How can you listen to Wu-Tang with your son?
Yeah. It's a good point. I honestly, like, there are times when I will expose my children to music I like, and I just turn down the bad words. Like, I turn the volume and I flip it down and then go back. And they know, like, what the word is that I just manually bleeped, but, you know.
The three-year-old
does not feel like you're being a real parent.
I just let it go with a three-year-old.
Yeah, well, that's
now I'm not going to play CeeLo Green or whatever. Like, I'm not playing, you know, like, I'm not playing that song, for example. But, like, you know, I don't care at the three-year-old.
Every now and then. What you'll find, our oldest, you know, we used to watch Sopranos, and then, you know, when he was a baby, and then one night,
he knew that
the F-bombs came out, and we're like, oh, okay, we got to stop doing this.
Well, and what's funny about me with music, though, is the subject matter. When they're writing about, like, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, and they're singing about this stuff, and they're like, and I'm going, like, she's three, does she have, there's no bad words in it, but does she have any, like, she has no clue what's going on in this song. Because I remember listening to Traveling Wilburys and hearing that song, what's the song, I'm going to screw it up. There's one song on that album where he's basically just every phrase is about a woman. And I'm just remembering, like, when I was a kid, not thinking, like, oh, I thought it was actually about getting your oil changed. Oh, I thought it was actually about your refrigerator not running.
Right,
like,
right, yeah.
I didn't realize this was about something else.
Yeah.
It took me until I was, like, 13 to realize that.
So going back to 91, which Joe thinks is, you know, the year.
The year.
Low End Theory, Red Hots.
Death Certificate, Ice Cube.
When was Blood Sugar Sex Magic?
91.
That is from front to back, start to finish. That's one of the greatest albums of all time.
Also,
agree.
Ghetto Boys, the album that Mind Playing Tricks on Me is, We Can't Be Stopped. That album came out in 91, and also the debut of Tupac Shakur.
I'm telling you, it is the last great musical revolution this country will ever see. Was early 90s.
Yeah, and the debut of Tupac Shakur,
and it all was West Coast, where the Titans can't win a football game.
Ooh,
we'll do that when we come back.
Segway,
folks. Morning Drive. We'll be right back.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.